Hey there, beautiful people. It's Jarrett. And before we get into this episode, I want to remind you that this episode was taped on Tuesday afternoon. We didn't have Georgia election results. Whoop, whoop. And the terrorist attack that happened on our U.S. Capitol on Wednesday hadn't happened either. So obviously there's no discussion about that. But I do want to let you know we've got plenty to say about this. And my gut tells me this is not the last time we'll have an opportunity to discuss what just happened and what's probably about to. Enjoy this episode. It's really, really a fantastic one. Probably going to be one of my favorites, and I hope you enjoy it too. Ladies, gentlemen, ladies, gentle them, beautiful people, welcome to Fans High in the brand new year, the podcast for all those complex and complicated conversations about the gray areas in our lives. I'm not quite off of vacation yet, but here nonetheless, journalist and writer Jared Hill.
And I am still a bad bitch, even in 2021. Travell Anderson, coming up on the show.
I just love the shoulders. Still a bad bitch.
Little something for the people. Coming up on the show this week, one of the names of the 2020 game was diversity, equity, and inclusion. We're going to try to get beyond the buzzwords of it all with a very special guest who will be joining us. But first, we've got our Pass the Popcorn, as always. This is our segment to discuss all the foolishness y'all talking about on these internets and in these internet streets, okay? This week, we wanted to start off 2021, like many of you all are, talking about New Year's resolutions. Now, I feel like so many people this year in particular, we've moved away from the term New Year's resolution, or I should say New Year resolution. Or is it New Year's? Oh, it's New Year.
It's possessive. Year, apostrophe S. Yeah.
Right. New Year resolution. New Year's resolution.
I think what you were talking about was New Year's resolutions, which is a different problem.
Listen, we got lots of issues, all right? But I feel like we're not using that language anymore, right? I've seen so many people talking about like setting the right intentions for 2021 and vision building for 2021 and intention setting, which I find interesting, just as a way to reorient oneself away from the idea of like doing resolutions, because let's be real, in 2 months, the resolutions be broken and tucked away in that drawer, you know, in your kitchen where the coupons and the ketchup packets at.
Not the ketchup packets, Jesus. I feel like there was a study that came out years ago. I always remember Good Morning America talking about, I think it was like within 21 or 27 days, most people have broken their New Year's resolutions. And like, that's an abomination. Like, that's a real problem.
Are you a New Year's resolution, intention setting type of girl? Is that what you do?
I'm not that kind of girl. Actually, I think it was that data that came from Good Morning America that kind of stopped me with making New Year's resolutions. I do know that I'm approaching this year with a little bit more vigor than I have other years in the past, because I felt like quarantine, pandemic, you know, all the bullshit of last year was kind of debilitating for a lot of us. And I know for myself specifically, last year was just a lot of introspection and growth and, frankly, depression and anxiety and all kinds of different things. And I feel like at this point, like, the pandemic is not nearly over, right? We've still got a long way to go into moving, you know, kind of out of this phase of the pandemic, if you will. And I feel like, okay, we know what this feels like. We know how to do this. Now it's time to get going, right? We gotta get work done. So I'm trying to look at this year as an opportunity to kind of move into the next phase of how to operate in quarantine for myself. And so that's really where I am. And I have been working on a vision board that's not quite done. What?
Well, no, I was just going to ask, like, you know, for the folks who are familiar with the show, y'all know we pre-recorded the Christmas episode with Kaylin Allen and then last week's episode. So, like, we've had a little bit of a break, finally.
Yeah.
And I say that with love to all the Fanti fam. But I'm wondering if you were able to use that time period to do some of this stuff, this rigmarole that you're talking about.
Well, I took off the rest of this week as well, because I felt like the last 2 weeks didn't feel like vacation as much as I wanted them to.
Y'all, I have to tell y'all, I sent Jared an email earlier this week. Yesterday,
you sent me like five today. So,
I see you took off that vacation responder.
It did turn off automatically.
But he had a vacation responder, y'all. And the vacation responder was like, oh, yeah, I'll be back January 11th. I texted him with the quickness, January 11th?
Listen, you people will be fine, okay?
Who do you think you are?
I'm somebody who runs their own business, goddammit. And so I come back when I get good and goddamn ready. And I'm working today, you know, Monday and Tuesday of this week. I was like, okay, well, technically I'm still here. So I'm going to be taking the rest of this week. And it was one of those things where I wanted to give myself time to do whatever I wanted. If I wanted to sleep later, I was going to sleep later. If I wanted to get in bed or get up or go take a walk or, you know, eat half a box of Samoas this morning. Whatever it is, I'm just going to like let myself have that freedom, because I feel like I don't tend to do that on vacation. Those first weeks of holiday break, it was still like, well, I should be up already, or I should be doing this, or I should be doing that. And I was like, I don't want to do that. What?
No, I'm not doing anything against you. I'm just saying, I was thinking for myself. I was like, you know, I've never really been a New Year's resolution type of girl either. And the whole idea of like vision setting, intention setting, setting your priorities, I think that's cute and all. But it's just not for me. And I knew when I got a blessing from the cosmoses, okay, about a week or so ago.
Is the cosmoses the osmosis of the cosmos? What is cosmosis?
It's whatever you need it to be, sugar.
Okay.
Okay. And I was reading my Bible, and my Bible said that in 2021, we going where the money reside, where the money reside.
Okay, you know what? You were reading that same version. You were reading that same version of the Bible that says a house is not a home and shit. Like, I hate you. I hate you so much. I think cosmosis is like your sis that's the cosmos or some shit. I don't know. But I felt like as this year was wrapping up, like I was starting to do some, I'm doing like a redesign in the house. I'm like repainting everything and just kind of wanting some new energy up in here. And like I started playing my, you know, Apple playlists, and then kind of letting Apple choose the music. Kind of fell into an Ariana Grande spiral after watching the documentary. And at the end of the documentary concert, they performed Thank You Next. And I thought to myself, you know what? I think Thank You Next is the energy that I'm approaching 2020 and 2021. Because that whole song is about, I went through some shit, but I learned some lessons. Thank you for what you gave me. Now go head on. Right. And I think that is kind of the way that I'm looking at 2020 and moving into 2021. And I have a vision board that I'm working on. I have like all of these different things, because I haven't done a vision board in years. As I was cleaning up some stuff, I saw a vision board that I started and never finished probably like 2 years ago. And it's been like in a corner somewhere. So I'm working on it because it is something important to me. Well, I mean, we'll see. I mean, some of the stuff actually happened. So shit, why not? Well, all listen, right.
You know, sometimes it's just about thinking it. Sometimes, you know, the mind, what they say, the mind is a terrible thing to waste. So if you just think it, it puts it out into the universe.
Did you just pull a mind is a terrible thing to waste?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. So if you don't waste it and you just think it, maybe you don't have to put, you know, I feel like people always talk about, you know, doing the vision board because you gotta get it out of your mind and onto some paper. Or they say like write down your thingamajig. I saw somebody that say take your vision board and do it like digitally and have it as your screensaver. On your computer or on your phone and all of that. I said to myself, I said, oh, that sounds real cute. That sounds all amazing. I ain't gonna do it, but that sounds amazing for somebody.
I'm going to put the new vision board as my home screen on my iPad, but the home screen on my iPhone is a gentleman that I'm about to say, I do some naked appreciate. Man. He's not naked, but I do enjoy looking at him, and he is the vision.
That? How Amen. You doing?
Shout out to British. Oh, you know what? I'm not going to say who it is. I'll tell you off break, offline. You actually have met him. That kind of narrows it down. Why am I being coy? Shout out to Reggie Yates. He's an actor and presenter over in over in the UK.
Oh yes, I was featured in a documentary.
We know we were there.
That he did. Yes, because she, you know, she's international. I don't know if you knew, but she's international over here. Okay.
I mean, we're international around here. I don't know if you heard, but we got niggas listening in New Zealand and Africa and okay. None of those racist people in Antarctica, just for the record.
Let's get to the show, okay?
Coming up, we're talking about the words that kind of frame a lot of this show and the work that we do every day, but also, frankly, they kind of annoy the shit out of me. Fanti diversity and inclusion when we come back.
Hey, I'm Dan McCoy.
I'm Stuart Wellington.
And I'm Elliot Kalin. Together, we're The Flophouse,
a podcast where we watch a bad movie and then talk about it.
Movies like Space Hobos, Into the Outer Reaches of the Unknown and the Things That We Don't Know, the movie, and also Who's That Grandma?
Zazzle Zippers, Breakdown 2, and Backhanded Compliment.
Elvis is a Policeman.
Baby Crocodile and the Happy Twins.
Leftover Potatoes?
Station Wagon 3.
Herbie Goes to Hell.
New episodes available every other Saturday.
Available at MaximumFun.org or wherever you get your podcasts.
Bye. Bye.
Macho Man to the top rope. The flying elbow. The cover. We've got a new champion.
We're here with Macho Man Randy Savage after his big win to become the new world champion. What are you going to do now, Match?
I'm going to go listen to the newest episode of the Tights and Fights podcast, oh yeah.
Tell us more about this podcast.
It's the podcast of power, too sweet to be sour, funky like a monkey, woke discussions, man, and jokes about wrestlers' fashion choices, myself excluded, yeah.
I can't wait to listen.
Neither can I. You can find it Saturdays on Maximum Fun. Oh, yeah. Dig it.
Welcome back to Fanti. We are talking about diversity and inclusion this week. They are the key buzzwords that may have touched every corner of the workplace and our personal lives last year. Looking ahead to 2021, we'll usher in our first female, our first Black, and our first South Asian Vice President of the United States in Kamala Harris. And as we figure out getting back to work, our new normal lives, whatever that will be, and the inevitable race war, I'm sure. So my gut tells me that we've got a lot more conversation to have about the makeup of this here nation. Travell and I serve as president and vice president, respectively, of the National Association of Black Journalists here in Los Angeles. And in turn, we do a lot of work in diversity and inclusion from various different perspectives. We thought one of the perfect people to help us have a smart and thoughtful conversation about just this would be the CEO of an award-winning diversity, equity, and inclusion marketing firm. So that's who we got, Sharon Smith Akinsanya. Welcome to Fanti.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited.
Thank you.
Oh, you're very welcome. I'm so excited.
I'd love to start with, I feel like the terms diversity, equity, inclusion, they get used in so many different types of ways that I feel like some people just don't actually know the difference between those three tenets. Could you start by like giving us that quick definition and then talk to us a little bit about how you got into this work?
Yeah, diversity, equity, and inclusion. Those are the buzzwords of 2020. I can't tell you how many times I've heard it and how many times that, you know, I've said those words. But diversity is all about bringing together diverse individuals from all ethnic backgrounds. Now, some people talk about diversity of thought, but I don't rock with that. So we can talk about that a little bit later because I don't think that's included in this. Then there is equity. Not to be confused with equality. Equity is about fairness, right? So if you ask me for a race, Travell, and I got on my old Jackie Jackson sneakers, tennis shoes, and you got on cleats, okay? That's not exactly fair. you got a little bit of an advantage, so that's not equitable, okay? Then there's inclusion, where it is so important that we all have a seat at the table where the decisions are being made and feel like we belong and have a voice.
I love that. So how did you get into this work specifically?
Yeah, I got into this work starting out in the radio business in St. Louis, you know, and I thought I wanted to be on the radio, but then I found out that they didn't make a lot of money. Mm-hmm. And my dad had a rule that you can't come back home. You know, after you leave, you need to be able to take care of yourself. And so I thought that I might need to do something a little bit different. And so I got talked into going into radio sales. And that means working with top advertisers and ad agencies, convincing them to spend advertising dollars to reach my audience. And my particular audience in St. Louis at KMJM Magic 108 at the time was the African-American consumer. But I got a little bit disheartened because I was going out, I was doing a great job. And, you know, I was saying, hey, I work for the number one radio station in the market and you really should spend money with me. And I was not getting my fair share of the advertising buy. Mm-hmm. Even though we were the number one station in the market, we weren't getting our fair share. And I had to investigate that. And the reason is because we targeted Black people. Mm. And so it just wasn't assumed, right, that we had the dollars to invest in different goods and services.
Yeah.
That's one of the ways that we see institutionalized racism, right? Like the Black dollar does not have the same value as the white dollar.
It doesn't have the same value. So I had to go out and justify, make the case as to why you, Mr. Advertiser, should spend money on my radio station. So I got really good at understanding the Black consumer, Black culture, how we roll, how we spend our money, why we spend our money, and who we spend it with. So I was able to make the case. And that got me really interested in marketing and diversity and equity and inclusion and what were we really and truly being left out of? You know, what was it that we didn't know that we didn't know? Mm-hmm. So I was really intrigued by that. But then I had a boyfriend who wanted to move to Minneapolis and to work for Prince. He was a guitar player. So I decided, single, no kids. You know, what the heck? You know, we'll go to Minneapolis because there was nothing in Minneapolis but snow and Prince. But what ended up happening is that I ended up working for Prince and I lost my boyfriend. But that's a whole nother
show. Listen, we will have you back for that episode.
That's a whole nother show. That's a whole nother show. So I was thinking, we're here in the Twin Cities, Minneapolis, St. Paul, with 19 Fortune 500 companies, Target, Best Buy, Medtronic, Deluxe Checks, like everybody's here, United Healthcare. And professionals of color were moving here, but they were leaving in like 18 to 24 months. I'm like, what? Mm. I'm never going to get married. I'm never going to have kids. It's just going to be awful. And so, but I said, something's going on. So I decided to start a consultancy called the Ray McKenzie Group, named after my baby girl, Ray McKenzie. And it was really all about working with those corporations to teach them how to build stronger relationships with consumers of color, because they were leaving money on the table and we were losing out on opportunities as well. So that's how I got, because I was intrigued, right, what was happening. So that's how I got started in the business. And then it was going really, really well until 2008. And we know what happened in 2008.
Don't we all?
Mm-hmm. Barack Obama got elected. And what else? the great recession, right? So guess what the first budget was to be cut? Mm. Diversity, equity, and inclusion. Mm-hmm. So me, my mom, my daughter, you know, we were homeless, trying to figure out what to, because I lost most of my business, lost my car, lost my house. We didn't know where, you know, it was just from night to night, we were on a different sofa. But I was very well networked.
Yeah.
Listen to what I'm saying. Very well networked and connected. And my good friend, Greg Cunningham, who worked for Target at the time, my number one client who had left me, said, you got to get a job. You know what? You got to get a job. You remember what your daddy said, okay? Still counts. And so I got pulled out of that recession by going to work for UNCF, United Negro College Fund, where mind is a terrible thing to waste, raised $10 million to help low to moderate income kids get to and through college. But that is where I started to understand the value of truly understanding what was happening in politics. That's where I started to meet governors and senators and build relationships with mayors. Like, what's really happening on the inside where decisions are made? Mm-hmm. So, yeah. So in, and I learned. So in January, Dr. King Day of 2017, I relaunched the Ray McKenzie Group. But this time with complete focus on making sure that we did not leave any Black professionals and other professionals of color on the field, making sure that Black professionals were connecting directly with recruiters and hiring managers at top corporations who were serious about increasing racial inclusivity at all levels of the corporate structure. Why is that important? Because the population shift, demographics is changing. You don't get to maintain your competitive edge unless you make sure that you are increasing racial inclusivity from the boardroom to entry level. And so that's what I've been doing since 2017.
Well, all right.
Yeah.
We love to see it.
Yeah. 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 Pretty awesome. You know, and started, a, you know, wrote a book called Colorful. Competitive strategies to retain top talent of color. Yes. Just saying.
All right,
just got it. Just got it out the box.
Love it.
So
you know, so
yeah. So okay. So I was talking about all of us working diversity and inclusion in different ways. And Travel,
yes.
Talk to us about how you got into diversity and inclusion work with NABJ.
I mean, I just wanted to be included.
yeah. See,
I started. People who listen to the podcast know I started my career at the LA Times in a diversity fellowship program and quickly discovered that that diversity fellowship program was one of the only ways that folks of color, particularly Black folks, got into that newsroom. And then some of the other Black folks who were in the newsroom, Ann Simmons is one I'll shout out. She was vice president of the LA chapter of NABJ at the time. And she was like, all right, Black folks, y'all need to go and get yourself to a meeting. And then from there, it just kind of spiraled. And then NABJ as a space wasn't a space that was welcoming of my full self as a queer person, as a non-binary person. And then from there, it just kind of spilled on into, you know, now this career where, you know, I do my little consulting here and there, my little presentations here and there. But it really started from me just trying to make spaces for myself to feel welcome and supported. And I know for you, Jared, I pulled you into NABJ.
Yeah.
But, you know, I feel like Black folks...
You pulled me into leadership at NABJ.
Well, yes. Okay. I pulled you into leadership because you had that little thing, you know, back in the day.
Oh, wow.
But...
Back in the day, is out. Yep. Is this something I should know? Back in the day.
He's talking about the Melania Trump plagiarism story that kind of blew me up and within NABJ and kind of pulled
Jared
me
Jared was the person who discovered that and like,
I know
brought
that.
And, you know,
I was just wondering if he was going to come clean. I'm just like, I know that. So I'm like, that thing?
It's
you know, so I already
I
know the answer.
Right. It's something I don't bring up a whole lot, but like... But friends and
I'll do it for you.
And Travel. Right.
Thank you, Travel. Because that was a thing.
But
thank
I
you.
Know
thank
I
you.
Feel like as Black folks in various spaces where we're one of the only or one of few, we often get like pulled into this work because we're there and we're looking around and they're like we're like, why are we the only one? Where everybody else at? You know?
Exactly.
But Jared, what about for you prior to the NABJ of it all? I mean, were you doing this type of stuff?
Yeah. So what's interesting is I hadn't thought about like how I got into this work until we started discussing this episode. And looking back at it throughout my career, I've often been like the something, right? I was the young one. I was the Black one. I was the something, the queer person on various shows that I worked on in, you know, different newsrooms that I've been in and things like that. And so when Melania did happen, NABJ called me and invited me to their, you know, major, to the convention that year in 2016. And I was kind of like pulled into the fold of Black journalists and really being able to, you know, kind of do the work with Black journalists and being able to kind of, you know, see the ways that Black journalists and the work of Black comms professionals was important and why it wasn't, you know, something that was always in the forefront of the mind of different newsroom managers and things like that. And so then when I got, asked to take an open seat for vice president by Travel, which I always say, like, if I would have known how much work this was, I probably would have said no, but I'm glad that I said yes.
You and me both. Good.
But working with NABJ has been interesting because I feel like diversity and inclusion is one of those things that touches everything, right? One of the places I've been looking at it most recently is like closed captioning and the ways that like the language doesn't always match up to what they're supposed to be talking about and things like that. We just see it everywhere in so many different ways. And I know for myself, I found more and more value in it because I was the person that after Melania happened, I was working at a lot of different Black outlets, a lot of queer outlets and things like that. Mm-hmm. And noting the ways that when I was working at a mainstream, air quote, place, they always wanted me to talk about the Black stuff. And they always wanted me to cover the Black star or the Black film or the Black show or the Black this, that, and the other. And seeing how frustrating it started to get to be like, huh, you didn't call me for that interview. That's interesting. Mm-hmm. But then also starting to recognize, I actually don't know if I wanted to do that, right? Like, I really kind of wanted to focus on the Black stuff, or I wanted to focus on the queer stuff. And so even in my career, like, I was starting to get moved into, like, the diverse and inclusive places. And then more formally with NABJ, it's been a lot of that kind of work. And, you know, in this past year, Travel and I have talked about how on the show, how we've, you know, been working with the LA Times after they had a big moment talking about race and inclusion at the LA Times and other outlets and things like that. And so it's something that's been important to me because I feel like it directly affects me, but also because we're able to see the needle move, right?
Right.
We're able to see people getting hired. We're able to see companies start to change the way they use language. And there's always like little moments where you can see like, oh, that's better than it was a year ago. You know what I mean? Like, and
I do know what you mean. It's so important that we take our rightful places. And I know how frustrating it gets when it's like, okay, she's Black, he's Black, they Black, so they must have an answer, right? I know how frustrating that gets. But let me tell you what my mom told me. After George Floyd, I was in a fetal position. Honestly, I couldn't move. I physically couldn't move here in Minneapolis. And I cried for days. And my mom came over and she said, look, little girl, I'm going to need you to get up. I'm going to need you to take your rightful place. This is why we have leaders. I know that you get tired sometimes. And I know this is hard. And it's okay to feel it, but you can't stay stuck. Your community and your people need you now more than ever before. You are a leader. Get up and do what it is that you do. So every time you guys, we get into those situations where it's like, oh, I know they asked me that because we Black. Make it the best thing we can do and make it count.
Definitely.
And make it count, because that means we have a seat at the table for real, though.
I love that you say that, because it's one of those things that I've thought a lot about lately, is that every company is just asking the Black people what to do. And like, being Black does not make you a diversity and inclusion expert.
No, so, no, it doesn't.
Yeah. And the way that we structure the conversations here, we like to talk about the things we love and the things that we don't. And so if we're looking at the pieces of, you know, where we are fans of diversity and inclusion work, what do you love most about the work that you do? And I think you were starting to kind of touch on that there.
You know, the thing that I love most about it is that I'm making progress, that people are listening to what I'm telling them that they need to do to move the needle forward, not only in their personal careers to get their careers right and their money straight, but CEOs and CHROs are listening to me when I'm saying you got to get out of your narrow networking comfort zone. And you must just decide to make a difference. You need to decide what kind of organization you want to lead. You've got to decide whether or not you want to have a competitive edge, or you want to just be ordinary. Because we all know, the studies always, you know, they all tell us, you know, we know that diverse, equitable, and inclusive organizations are more innovative and profitable. What's stopping you? What's stopping you is you haven't decided to do so. Because those who decide, it just happens. Well, I need, you know, 3 Black folks over here, 4 queer folks over there, 2 Hispanics here, and it happens. And it just happens. So what type of legacy do you want to lead? You know, and that's why I really wanted to make things happen instantly, you know, after George Floyd. I had to do something to help level the playing field. And that's why I launched my People of Color Careers Social Hiring Network for professionals of color, to make sure that we can identify employers. Listen to what I'm saying now. Identify employers who are serious and committed to increasing racial inclusivity at all levels of the organization. See, we don't have time. So I want to do the work. I want to say, no, don't even think about them over here. The ones that are on this platform have already been vetted. And so because we deserve to get that high paying career, we deserve to be in the C-suite. We deserve a seat at the table. And I want to make sure that we get there. That's my mission.
I love that.
What I love about my work is that I'm moving the needle. Things are happening.
Yeah. I similarly feel that way, right? I like, even though it's stressful, even though I want to cuss everybody out, you know, even though I'd be tired at the end of the day,
yes.
Right? I love seeing a space transform, right? Because of the work that I did, because of the conversations that I introduced people to, because of the kind of shift in thinking, right? The shift in ethos of a particular space. And I think like that's that type of kind of intangible reward. Like it's a feeling, right? When you look up, you be like, oh,
you can feel the shift.
You can feel the shift. And you also know, right, that it is making a space better for other people, right? Like, yeah, it's going to be cool for you too if I'm the person doing it. But I know even more so it's going to be even better for all the other folks, right, who don't have the energy or the capacity or the wherewithal or the expertise to transform that space in that particular way. That's right. They too can benefit from it.
No question. That's why we have leaders. Leaders lead and make things happen. And that's who you are.
Absolutely.
There it is. Yeah. I also have to also acknowledge that, you know, I also love doing this work because I like telling people that they wrong.
I was going to say, you like to just tell people that they doing some shit wrong. You love that.
It ain't right. You know, like it just ain't right. Sometimes I found that like people need that like direct, you know, conversation, that direct calling out, because so much I feel like oftentimes, especially as diverse quote unquote folks in these spaces, we often have to just like figure out ways to couch our criticism in something that's like not as direct or not as inflammatory because we try and maintain our jobs, right?
Right.
But like as somebody who does diversity, equity, and inclusion work, when you go into these spaces, like you're paying me to tell you that you fucked up, you know?
Absolutely.
You know, and so like that's empowering to me.
Isn't it? You fucked up.
Exactly. We've gotten off of
calls. Is that how you say it?
That's exactly how I say it.
Okay.
We've gotten off of calls where I felt like Travell was ready to shoot like lightning out of their fingertips. Like, yes! He was like, okay, sis. Okay.
Listen,
I know for myself.
They need that.
Well, go ahead. Well, I know for myself, part of what I really love, you both touched on it, is like being able to see the shift, right? Being able to see the work actually having a real impact when oh, your newsroom has how many black people in it? And like, we're able to like see people getting hired, right? We're able to see the way that changes the narrative. One of the initiatives last year from NABJ from the national perspective was we need to be capitalizing the B in black when we're talking about black people. And like last year we were able to see the way that what happened in Minneapolis actually was really catalyzing into shifting that kind of narrative, right?
That's right.
I remember last year seeing a headline from ABC News and the headline had the word racist in it. And I remember thinking, like, this is a small moment, but, like, we're calling a thing this week, right? Like, at ABC News and other places.
Yeah.
And, like, it's nice to kind of see the things shift. But also, like, it gets a little bit frustrating when you're not seeing the shift happen fast enough. But but also, you kind of look at it and see, like, you know, one of the questions I'm always asking white folks now when they're talking about Black Lives Matter, I'm like, yeah, but did Black Lives Matter 5 years ago when we were talking about this? Six, seven years ago when we were saying that, but you were pushing back against it, you know? So I would love for us to be able to kind of transition into the things that irritate us, frustrate us about diversity and inclusion. And I want to kind of get into it with something that you alluded to earlier regarding diversity of thought and why you don't feel like that's necessarily a thing.
All right, so you want me to do that?
Go, do it.
So I'm in these rooms, you know, talking to CEOs and CHROs, and it says, you know, we are all over diversity and we have so many diverse thinkers and they're from different parts of the world. And, you know, it really makes my organization thrive. And I said, let's stop. We're not talking about diversity of thought. We're talking about making sure more Black people are in the C-suite. So when Sharon Smith Akinsanya is talking about diversity, let's clarify. We're not talking about diversity of thought. We're talking about leveling the playing field. We're talking about admitting that 1619 happened in this country. Mm-hmm. That, you know, when the first slaves, you know, were drug upon the shores of Virginia, it happened. Mm-hmm. And so we have to make sure that we are doing what we need to do in corporate America to level the playing field. So the thing that I hate most is when we get when we don't acknowledge the thing, as you call it, Jared. You know what I mean?
I when you're saying this, it's making me think about, and I've been Googling it while we were talking. In October of 2017, the Black VP of Apple, VP of Diversity at Apple, said 12 white, blue-eyed, blonde men in a room can be a diverse group. And I know people like us hear that and you're like, oh, sis. Right? Because it's that idea of diversity of thought, right? Yeah.
He should have just resigned. You know, you just resigned. That's not diversity of thought. That's 12 white, blue-eyed men in a room doing what they've always done.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And when you do what you always done, you're going to get what you always got. Okay?
Exactly. Yes.
And we should say, right, that also I feel like, quote-unquote, diversity of thought is like the way by which folks kind of justify their lack of racial diversity in a particular space.
Oh, we're diverse.
Exactly.
Oh, absolutely.
They're like, we're okay.
And the hiring of a white woman, right?
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah, because we got women. We've got white women.
Yes.
So, you know, so we're good. We've got white women. You know, so we're good, Sharon. No, you just have white women.
You just have white women. Right?
You just have white women.
That's one of the places that really, really frustrates me the most in diversity and inclusion work is when you see... This may be controversial and it may not be, and I don't really care, but like, I'm sorry, if your diversity and inclusion department is ran by a white person, I have an issue, period.
No, your diversity, equity, and inclusion department cannot be run by a white person. So I got to tell you guys this story.
Yes.
I got to tell you a story. So it's a major corporation here in Twin Cities that shall remain nameless. Mm-hmm. So
you know I'm doing the mental work to figure out who you're talking about.
So I really got to have a conversation. He's my client. He's paying me. Is that, you know, that conversation that we talked about earlier, mm-hmm. Travell? Like, they pay you to tell mm-hmm. you when you, okay,
you fucked up.
Fill it in, blanks, when
you fucked up.
Thank you. So that was what was supposed to happen on that Saturday. And so I go over and we have tea. So that's sort of a clue. But anyway, so we have tea, this big, beautiful, fabulous home mm-hmm. on the lake. And I say, listen, and this is short story short. Obviously, we did some niceties and things like that. I said, you're going to have to move your chief diversity officer into another space. It's not a good look and your employees hate it. Oh, no, my team would tell me if they really didn't. No, see, they wouldn't. See, you pay them and they're not going to tell you. And you're the CEO. They're not going to tell you that. So, he's doing a good job. So here's the problem. Optics matter. Optics matter. And this is one of those roles. Mm-hmm. This is one of those roles. When you're saying that you are committed to diversity, equity, and inclusion at the highest levels of the organization, I'm sorry, you can't have a white chief diversity officer. It doesn't work. You look foolish. Mm-hmm. You want me to fire? No, I just said move.
Move. Yes.
Move. So I was trying. Well, I didn't, you know, and I had to take that risk. The contract was not renewed. Mm-hmm. That's how I knew that they weren't serious.
That
they weren't serious.
I'm almost positive I've told this story on the show before, but I did this piece for Variety where we were talking with the heads of different networks. And the long story short, I had kept getting all of this feedback about diversity and inclusion being organic, and we wanted to be a part of the fabric of our company and, you know, all this shit. And like, the fourth time I heard that from the heads at NBC, I said to them, I feel like what I hear you saying by saying you don't have a measurable goal is that you don't have no plan. Right. And like when you continually hear companies talk about, well, I think he's doing a fabulous job, or we have this white man and he's doing the best, like all of that. It's like, so y'all don't have no real measurable ways to move these things because you have a white man telling these black people or whatever how they need to be more diverse and inclusive.
It was crazy. Now, what, you know, he wasn't even gay. Right. He was just white. It wasn't nothing I could do. I couldn't do nothing. You know, I didn't have anything to work with.
Sure, so he wasn't even a gay white. Come on.
Wasn't even a gay white. No. No, I'm serious. I mean, I didn't have anything like to give me something. I had no tissue. I had nothing. So, hilarious. You know, this is why I say to professionals, choose wisely. Ask good questions when you go on those interviews. Find out about the DEI plans. See who's on the board. Look who's in the C-suite. Ask questions about the plan. Everybody's not perfect, but you'll know if they got a plan because they'll be able to tell you what it is. Mm-hmm. They'll say, this is why we need you. We're on a journey. We're looking to have 3, you know, by this time, 5 by this time, 10. They're able to tell you what the plan is. So choose wisely because you are in the catbird seat.
Listen, right. being able to name what the plan is, I think is so important because if you guys are talking about wanting to increase revenue, there's a number and a date attached to that, right?
If you want to grow the markets,
all those different things, there is a number and a date attached to it. But when you're talking about diversity and inclusion, it's, well, you know, and ooh, and like very, very abstract, broad ass language. Yeah.
And I wanted to go another step further and also say that one of my contentions is when your only person of color is also your diversity, you know, person, right? So like, it's good to have that person and we need that person, right? But I sometimes feel as if, you know, that ends up being the one place where the person of color can work and those other C-suite positions seem to be, you know, barred off from the rest of the folks of color.
Yeah, reserved for white people.
They're that. Listen,
And really to that point of them being reserved for white people, is that diversity, that chief diversity officer is never on in the line of succession to become CEO, right? Mm-hmm. That person is always, you know, in line to do what they're doing until they go do it somewhere else.
It is true. It is absolutely true. But it does need to be a C-suite position. Mm-hmm. And it does need to report directly to the CEO if you're going to have it.
Yeah.
Because the CEO needs to have the ear of a credible, successful, experienced chief diversity officer, or else it's not real.
I know that's right.
And they need to have a budget and a staff to be able to execute and get the work done.
That's it.
It's just not credible. And that's, well, those are the questions that we need to ask to make sure that we choose wisely.
Sharon, when we were producing this episode, we wrote a question with very beautiful language, but I want to reframe it because I'm enjoying the conversation with you. The way that we wrote the question was, what frustrates you most about this work? But what I really want to ask you is, what is the conversation that you're having with a glass of wine or maybe some brown juice, whatever it is that you're into, when you're with one of your girls or one of your family members or someone that you're having the conversation about, what is most difficult or frustrating about the work that you do?
What's really the most difficult and frustrating about the work that I do is that they're just not doing it. Mm-hmm. That when it's so easy to do, when you have power, when you're in charge, when you can just decide, then I have to ask the question, why not? We got study after study. We got to go get the McKinsey report, the Deloitte, are we serious, you guys? We know what you need to do. You know what you need to do to become profitable, to maintain your competitive edge, you know? And so people not doing it, just not doing it. And part of it is, me and my mom had a conversation about this. You know, it's so important for people in power, CEOs and CHROs and other leaders, policymakers, to have friends, real authentic friends that don't look like them. Mm-hmm. You know, who do you call when you want to celebrate? Mm. Who are you inviting to your Zoom holiday event? Who are you calling when you're sad? You know, so who are your golfing buddies? When you look around and you don't have one authentic friend that doesn't look like you, you have no empathy. You don't have anybody to even test the waters with. You see, I got my best friend is really white and really rich. Okay, she wear pearls to the bathroom. to the bathroom. Like, she ain't even playing around. She's so rich, she's scared to complain that she mad about the pandemic. She's like, I can't even complain. She's really rich and really white. And she's like, you know, and so when we're together, we're able to have these conversations. Mm-hmm. So to your point, Jared, you know, who am I drinking the wine with having these crazy conversations is with Jenny. Mm. You know, and Jenny's like, you know, good intentions don't mean a damn thing. Listen. You know, they have the money to invest and do this, that, and the other. Stop working with them. Mm. Work with these people over here, because you know she's in them circles.
Yeah,
that's right.
And
right,
so
Jenny.
Jenny. Yes, Jenny. She knows what's really happening. And so we went to a party once, you know, at one of a prominent black couple in town. And I walked into their home. I'm like, ooh, look at here. Ooh, look at here. Y'all living like rich white people out here. This house is fabulous. And Jenny looks at me and she said, I can't say that right. Mm-mm, check it.
That's not for you, Jenny.
Nope, not yet. You can't do that. But see,
you can have your privilege and I'll be able to say that. How about that?
She was able to ask the question. Mm. And she was able to get a lot of questions answered. You know, as we begin to develop our relationship, we've been best friends for 12 years. So she's just part of the family now, but she still can't say it. She knows that, mm-hmm. You know, but the empathy that she's developed in terms of, dang, I didn't know that. I mean, like, really just learning about, it's two Americas. Mm-hmm. You know, why would she know that? She'd go her whole life and never have a friend that looked like me. Mm-hmm. But right. Being intentional about making it happen changed her whole organization when she was chief human resources officer, just by having me and others in her life.
I love that. I have one question as we wrap up.
Yes.
I'm wondering, you know, we mentioned earlier how last year in particular, diversity, equity, inclusion, everybody was talking about it. Everybody's company posted something on social media about, you know, supporting Black lives and all of that. I'm wondering, you know, as we forecast 2021, I wonder if you have any thoughts about how us as consumers, like the people who are listening to the show, the people who are, you know, paying their dollars to various companies, how they can, you know, maybe like hold accountable, right? These companies that say Black Lives Matter, that say diversity, equity, inclusion is important to them, but, you know, maybe haven't yet, you know, shown us that.
You know, it's a great question. I wrote an article about it on BET.com and I talked about, you know, there's a lot of changes happening. And I said, but I see some caution flashing yellow lights. I see some warning signs because the shift is happening, right? We're seeing it, you know, first black female head of MSNBC cable, right?
Mm-hmm. Shout out to, you know, Rashida Jones.
Rashida Jones. Shout out to Rashida. Hey, girl. And really, you know, so, but I'm concerned that we've been here before.
Yeah.
So my ask in the BET.com article was, we're going to have to support Rashida and others. Mm-hmm. We gotta send a note to her boss. Cause see, we own social media. Mm-hmm. So we gotta shout them out and say, attaboy, who's next? Mm-hmm. We got to let everybody know that we're paying attention and we love these power moves, but what's the next one? Okay. And so we just want to make sure that we are staying active, not just when it's voting time, but when we see these shifts happen, to put our pedal, you know, keep our foot on that gas, because people like to hear from us. Let's use social media, which we own, and let people know what we think. It's easy to find contact information for, you know, whether it's Brian Roberts at, you know, Comcast or whoever, you know, we can find this information out, mm-hmm. You know? And so we have to stay active. And so the way we know about it is ask the question.
I love that.
We need to ask the question. And guess what? They're answering the question because everybody's ire is up, right? They don't want to mess up. Now is the time to get your answers, to send your emails, to do your tweets and posts and get the questions answered. We cannot let up. We have to save ourselves.
I know that's right. Sharon, before we let you go, I want you to tell people a little bit about how they can get more information on the McKinsey Group and the People of Color Career Social Hiring Network.
They just, you know, can follow me at Boldly Sharon, of course, on Twitter and Instagram. And, you know, you can follow me on Facebook, Sharon Smith, Kinsanya. I had to say that.
Yes.
And of course, you can find all the information on me at boldlysharon.com. And then peopleofcolorcareers.com. You know, create your free profile. Join us on this network. It's awesome. It's a great way to identify those employers who are serious about us, who have our backs, right? And it also gives us an opportunity to have our own backs. So boldlysharon.com is where you can find out all the information about me.
Our thanks to Sharon Smith Kinsanya, CEO of the Ray McKinsey Group.
The pleasure is all mine.
It is our pleasure. Sharon, thank you so much. You're fantastic. All right, as we go to break, this week's question is, what does diversity, equity, and inclusion look like to you? And we really want to get your feedback on this conversation. You can tweet or post using hashtag FantiFam. We'll be jumping in, responding to your posts on Twitter and Instagram at Fanti Podcast. I'm curious what we missed on our lists in our conversation, so make sure to use that hashtag FantiFam. Coming up, why y'all hate us so much and listener feedback and our dishonorable mentions. That's coming up next on Fanti. All right, so just because you are all grown up now doesn't mean that you've outgrown bedtime stories. And whether you want a story to turn you on or wind you down for better sleep, Dipsy helps you get in touch with yourself for some extra sweet dreams. Dipsy is an audio app full of short, sexy stories designed to turn you on. Each Dipsy story features characters that feel like real people in immersive scenarios, so you feel like you're right there. Dipsy also has wellness sessions to help you learn more about yourself and bedtime stories and soundscapes to help you relax before you drift off. And for listeners of our show, Dipsy is offering a 30-day free trial when you go to dipsystories.com/fanti. That's 30 days of a free trial when you go to dipsystories.com/fanti. dipsystories.com/fanti.
Fanti is also supported in part by Libby. Libby is a free reading app created by Overdrive that lets you borrow ebooks and audiobooks from your library on your phone, tablet, Kindle, or computer. All you need is a valid library card from your library, even if you don't have a library card currently, right? Some folks ain't got their library card. You can read samples of any book that you see. Libby works just like your physical library. You simply borrow available books you want to read, and then they return themselves automatically after your loan expires. Start reading today with Libby. Start reading right now. Go to meet.libbyapp.com to sign up. That's meet.libbyapp.com. Welcome back, beautiful people. We're going to get into our listener feedback segment. This is your opportunity to read us for filth, or as this week will show us, give us a lot of good compliments to help us start out 2021.
Can we just not encourage that listener feedback is reading us for filth? Can we just...
Well, listen, sometimes we deserve to be read.
Well, okay? That's fair.
Sometimes we deserve to be gathered. All right.
Who's gathering or complimenting us this week?
Well, so I pulled an email from Kelly as a good way to like start off the listener feedback of 2021 in a positive direction.
Which tells me that it's going left after this. But...
No. I swear it's positive. I swear.
Okay.
So this is an email from Kelly who said, I wanted to take a moment to say thank you for the work that you've done this year. I have been listening to your podcast all year, and I want you to know that I do appreciate the good that you bring me each week. And she also let us know that, yes, I do contribute monthly to Maximum Fund solely because of our show. That means she's part of the hashtag FantiFam. Shout out to you, Kelly. She says, I am a grade school teacher with two teenage daughters, and your perspective, knowledge, ideas, guests, and conversation have touched my life and contributed to my own meaningful conversations and lessons this year. I know you work hard to make this podcast engaging, informative, and entertaining, and I want you to know that your work is appreciated. Okay. I thought that was just like a cute little way just to like, you know, start us off positively with good vibes, good energies, you know? Okay.
Should we be putting good on the new merch?
Y'all let us know. Ooh, yeah. We should definitely
Something with good.
Like that good. That's it. That good.
Fanti, that good, something. I don't know. No, okay.
We'll figure it out. Anyway, yeah. A second email from Stephanie that I will read in part. This was in response to, I believe it was our freelancing gig economy episode. I forget the name of it. But I had
freelancing in Beyonce's gig economy, I think is what it was called.
Yeah, something like that. And I'd gotten a lot of feedback about this comment, but I said something to the effect of, like, I feel like as a freelancer, it's made me more of a capitalist because, like, I'm all about, you know, trying to go where the money reside. And that's all. Mary had a little lamb, okay? but this email from Stephanie I thought was an interesting one to read out because it's also, it mirrors some of the comments that we got on, like, Twitter and stuff like that. And Stephanie says, I generally keep my mouth shut when your show begins. When your show brings up new thoughts and feelings for me, I am a cishet white Canadian woman, so it's my job to pick apart my own reactions and take a moment of self-reflection. There has only been one episode I could not let go of, and that is your episode about the gig economy. She went on to say, demanding the money you are worth does not make you a capitalist. Wanting more money than you currently have does not make you a capitalist. Enjoying the money you have does not make you a capitalist. The only people who want the average person to believe they are willing participants in capitalism are the ones benefiting from the system. That may have seemed a little like a hard left, pardon the pun, turn. Yes, I call myself a socialist, but I didn't get there from student politics or reading a lot of Marx. I got there because I lived it and sought out sources that could help me clarify what I was feeling. I'm going to stop now because I have so much to say about the codependent nature of racism and capitalism and the roots of the labor movement and how healthcare is a petri dish for this BS. I just couldn't get my head around the way you had defined capitalism because from my experience, advocating for yourself and your value in a capitalist society is an act of anti-capitalism. That's why it's so hard. That ground down feeling when you think, well, I guess I have enough to get by and choose avoiding confrontation over career advancement or your true worth, that is capitalism doing its thing. And she included an image from social media. It's credited to @TherapyWithLee that says internalized capitalism looks like feeling guilty for resting, your self-worth being largely based on doing well in your career, placing productivity before health, and some other things. And I thought that was another good way to start out 2021, thinking differently about how I see kind of advocating for myself financially to go where the money resides.
Where the money resides is one of the great things that happened while we were away at break. We got a lot of feedback about this, actually. Emails, tweets.
Yes.
I feel like I got DMs about it because we used capitalism in the wrong connotation. So I appreciate the feedback. And like, it is something that I think about a lot, the way that capitalism has an impact on us. And I'm actually doing some work on something new that I'll be producing. And I might ask y'all for your feedback on it in a future episode. But like, I think that capitalism, I love this internalized capitalism piece, like feeling guilty for resting. Your self-worth is largely based on doing well in your career. Like, these are things I think about a lot right now. And so I really appreciate that feedback from Stephanie. So thanks for the email. It is now time for our dishonorable mentions. These are the stories or people that caught our attention this week that deserve a call out either for their good or their stupid. I am going to start off because this thing happened on Monday and I don't know if this is a dishonorable mention or an honorable mention. So we're just going to call it a menchon. It goes to Meghan McCain from The View. Now, Meghan... Honey, when I tell you Meghan McCain makes me feel about 17 different kind of ways, I don't know that she's been in dishonorable mentions before, but take a listen to what she had to say on Monday's show.
When I gave birth, I actually had postnatal preeclampsia, and I was in the hospital for a week after on a magnesium drip, and it really, really kicked my butt. And I was planning on coming back to the show for the election in 6 weeks after I gave birth, and I was physically unable to. I was physically unable to come. I was having, as any woman who has experienced anything like that, I had to have my husband and my mother-in-law help me do everything from shower to eat. It was deeply humbling and to help me take care of Liberty. And the whole time I was thinking, what a privilege it is to have this kind kind of maternity leave. And then, as I thought about it, the more angry I got that there weren't women in the rest of America that had the same kind of luxury that I had working here at The View.
So what frustrated me about this was kind of a bit of the conversation that we actually just had with Sharon. The ways that people like arrive at shit just really irk me, right? It is great that Meghan McCain sees the value in, you know, paid maternity leave. It is great that she has like come to that realization. But like Democrats, progressives, whomever you want to point to, have been talking about this for a long ass time, right? As being a problem. She goes on to talk about how, you know, she sees Republicans, there's great synergy for Republicans to be able to make this happen and blah, 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 and all that bullshit. But then she also talks later on in the episode, from what I'm told, like that she doesn't believe in paternity leave, or that she's not as supportive of paternity leave. And like, she just went through talking about all of these things that she went through with her own maternity leave, but like doesn't see the value in that for the child's father, right? And it's just, it's ridiculous. In the same way that we see white people just now kind of understanding, oh, Black Lives Matter. Or like years ago, the Mormon church being able to appreciate like, oh, gay people are a thing and it's okay to be gay. Mind you, right, they also have some other challenging shit around that. But I get frustrated with shit like this. And so Meghan, girl, shut up.
Not girl, shut up.
That is just how I felt. Like, I love that she's made this progress, but like, sis, you're real late and you're still kind of wrong. So that. But go ahead.
Well, my first honorable mention, I have to give it to the person who I've been, you know, referencing in a couple different ways throughout the entire show, and that is Darrell Smiley. He is the car salesperson who gave us and gifted us this Where the Money Reside.
Where the Money Reside?
Jingle. Where the money motherfucking reside, honey. Okay? And if you're not familiar, I need you all to check it out. I'm going to try to make sure we put a link in the little notes and stuff like that. But he's a Honda car salesman who, you know, came up with this video, this little jingle to talk about the deals that he could give people over the holiday break for their cars. And it's just a good, we're going to drop a clip of it in here right now. Go ahead, Jordan. Bam.
Okay, let me tell y'all something. I'm doing something real big this month. Any deal that y'all got and they beating us, I'm going to beat about $400. Just give me your VIN and the paper because I'm ass. What the what? What a money reside. What a money reside. What a money reside. What a money reside.
But yeah, so that's the anthem for 2021. We are going where the money reside, where the money reside, where the money reside, honey.
I want to give a dishonorable mention to Trump Republicans. It is Tuesday evening as we're recording this, and Georgia is wrapping up their election, and I don't know what the results are going to be. I'm hoping that Democrats do well and are able to control the Senate, but I just want to say that Trump Republicans, there is a special place in hell that I don't believe in for you people. Like, the ways that you guys are trying to thwart democracy and like tear apart this country for the sake of being able to hold favor with this asshole who hopefully will go to prison soon. Like, I am just kind of completely blown with Republicans. Trump Republicans to be specific, but Republicans in general. The ways that you guys are trying to subvert the Electoral College, the ways that you're trying to, you know, take power in Georgia, all of the bullshit that y'all have done, like, full stop, fuck the bullshit.
Wow. There we go.
Yeah.
I wanted to give an honorable mention to one of the queens from the newest season of RuPaul's Drag Race. Yes, we are back in another cycle of RuPaul's Drag Race. It started at the top of the year because RuPaul wants every single check that she can possibly get. But I want to give a shout out to Lidwell.
I'm not watching it, but get your money, girl.
I am, because I want to give a shout out. This goes to my shout out. Simone is the name of the drag queen. She calls herself the Ebony Enchantress. Oh. And she's just giving us fashion. She's giving us energy. She's giving me what I need. I know all of the Drag Race girls that list, if you watch the show, you're going to know who I'm talking about. And you're going to be saying, yes, work, bitch. Uh-huh. But I just wanted to shout her out because the first episode looks, honey. They were looks, honey. Okay.
Okay.
And she deserves something. I don't know what she deserves, but she deserves something.
I am. Okay. So I'm kind of like, I'm kind of double dutching on which one to go for with my last one. Because I've started watching this new season of The Bachelor and I have some challenges, but also Matt James is fine. But I feel like I have to acknowledge this Jacob Blake story. I want to just be fully transparent. I have really gone out of my way to avoid the details of the Jacob Blake story. However, you know, it's Tuesday as we're recording this and we found out like there will be no charges brought in that case where, you know, Jacob was shot in his back multiple times and is paralyzed now. And again, I'm not reading these stories right now because of my own mental health and trying to protect my own peace. But I feel like I would be remiss to not bring it up and say like another full stop, fuck this situation because it's egregious.
Very much so. And I feel like a lot of these things, you know, they feel even compounded because we're in the middle of a photosynthesis. A photosynthesis.
Oh, okay.
One of my friends, Bianca, shout out to Bianca. She a member of the Fanti fam. We were on the phone over the break. And when she said photosynthesis, and when I tell you I was down, okay? So now I've started using it, you know, in place of pandemic. Anyway, but yes, I feel like a lot of those things, it just, the emotional response just feels like compounded because of, you know,
yeah,
all of this that's happening. But, you know, collective
exactly,
Negro
exactly.
Sigh, okay?
You got another one?
Nope, that was it.
That's it for you? All right. Well, we want to thank you for listening. We appreciate you being a part of the Fanti fam and rejoining us for 2021. We've got some big shit coming in the next month, over these next few weeks here. So I'm excited for that. If you really enjoyed this conversation, maybe you might want to check out episode 19, episode called In the Newsroom Where It Happens, kind of talking about the ways diversity and inclusion looks specifically in newsrooms. You can check that out. We ask that you give us a 5-star rating and a great review on iTunes, Apple Podcasts, or wherever else you're listening to podcasts. We appreciate you being there. If you have a comment or suggestion about this week's show, tweet us at Fanti Podcast, or you can follow us on Instagram at Fanti Podcast as well. Make sure to use the hashtag Fanti fam, and we'll make sure to check out what y'all are saying and jump into the conversation.
And we tell y'all every week, right, that y'all need to use the hashtag Fanti fam. And you know, I sometimes make a distinction between the people who are using hashtag Fanti fam because we want to see your messages and the folks who are a part of the hashtag Fanti fam. You want to be part of the hashtag Fanti fam? You can help financially contribute to all this wondrousness that we provide y'all every week by becoming a member at MaximumFun.org/join. Click the little doohickey box by Fanti and you can help us create this wondrousness, this good,
this
as I
good,
have
good
saying.
For the sake of merch.
Yes. That part. Yes, the good for the sake of merch, which is coming, y'all. Jared is the reason why we haven't had it yet. You've said it publicly, so I feel like I'm not calling you out.
No, you're not. I'm real picky about what we gonna ask y'all to give us money for, and I just want to make sure that it's popping and shit. So that's why it's a little bit delayed.
And if you have, I will say, if you have a thought, a suggestion, a comment, some type of thing that you would like to see on the merch, go ahead and hit us up at our emails at fanti@maximumfun.org. All right?
Our music is by Corice. You can find him wherever you find your Slayworthy audio. That is Core.ece. Our graphics and video cool stuff and some other things are all by Ashley Wynn. Our producers, you ready?
Yeah, girl, they're going to get the regular daily schmag because I'm tired. Gone.
Oh, wow. Okay. I wish they could see you in the way that you just, we almost out of here. Listen. Our producer is Jordan Cowling.
Y'all better ask about me because I do all that all at the time.
And Laura Swisher.
And that's on who? Man Had a Little Lamb.
This is a production of Maximum Fun.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned. Audience supported.
Welcome to Pan. Welcome to Pantai Podcast.
Not Pantai Podcast.